quite honestly, most women bore me. You know, if they smoke, I'm turned off. If they drink, I'm out of there. If they're stupid, I'm bored. If they're mean, I'm bored. If they're trying to use me, I'm out of there. So I guess I'm very picky. If they don't work out, I'm not interested. If the mind is lazy and the body's lazy, who cares?
You mean working out physically?
That's right. If they're not in shape, hey, go be fat on someone else's time.
Listen, listening to Synchronon. Sick and Ron. Yes, you listen to Sick and Ron.
The Sick and Wrong, the world source for antisocial commentary.
Scumbags.
Good evening. Welcome to Sick and Wrong, the world's source for antisocial commentary. I'm on your host, E-Simon.
Hi, I'm Kate Rambo. Hiya.
What's the crack, Kate Rambo?
Not much.
Not too much going on?
I can never say, like, yeah, not much, and then I think of 20 things to bitch about.
That is true, but then again, I'm kind of asking you it rhetorically, because I don't want you to go into, like, a 10-minute tirade. I'm just kind of like, I'm expecting you to be like, oh, not much. How about you?
How are you? Nobody ever asks how you are.
No one
how
ever
are
does.
You? How are you
no one
doing?
Cares. You know what? I'm quite perplexed.
What are you perplexed by, D. Simon?
I'm concerned about the gangs. All
the gangs.
All the gangs. There's a lot of gangs in the news right now.
Why don't you elongate
those gangland activity
vowels
going on.
A little bit more, you Midwesterner.
The gangs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gangs going on. There are a lot of gangs. Have you been reading about all the gangs in the news?
You mean the gangs on Melrose, where we live? You mean all the gangs that are around us in this area?
No, I'm talking about
right.
I'm talking about the recent ambush at the hospital in Idaho. Three correction officers were killed, or injured, actually. They were injured. But these two Aryans managed to escape. It led to a statewide manhunt and spawned a double homicide investigation. And brought attention to the gang, the Aryan Knights, a white supremacist gang.
No joke.
Runs rampant through our prison system.
I'm just singing the B-52s, my own private Idaho in my head, so I kind of missed all of that.
Oh, I expected you to say that, so I'll explain a little further. Nicholas Umfenor and Skylar Mead, both these guys look like white supremacists.
His name is Skylar Mead.
M-E-A-D-E, Mead.
Oh my God, what a terrible name. Plus, I'm sorry if your name is Skylar, if anyone's listening.
Skylar.
I really don't like the name Skylar.
Well, what are you going to do, shorten it to Sky?
Sky's still a bit effeminate, and like obviously that's a Scottish isle as well. But I mean, you could go by La. What's wrong with that? La, like Lawrence?
Like Lars Ulrich?
Yeah,
no.
Why
hard
not?
Pass. Skylar. Anyway, that's completely besides the point. You're totally derailing this intro. Let me get through it. So these two guys, I'm not even going to say their name because you're going to go off on a tangent.
Skylar.
These two guys who look exactly how you'd picture a white supremacist to look were just arrested today in the Twin Falls area of Idaho after being on the run for like 36 hours. So they didn't even really last that long, which I'm surprised because they're both members of this white supremacist gang, the Aryan Knights. You'd think there'd be other Aryan Knights that would help them escape or hide out for a little while.
Nah, they've got families with little Aryan children. Plus, also, Idaho, isn't it still like really cold there now?
Yeah, I bet you it is kind of cold. But I mean, don't you think they would be like, yeah, you can hide in our barn?
No, because then they're also like an accomplice.
I think because they're all hateful and they hate each other. But so the Aryan Knights formed in like the mid-1990s in the Idaho prison system. And it's kind of like this organized criminal group, which they engage in drug trade. They attack people. Federal prosecutors describe them as a scourge within the state's prison system. And the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, said that they're one of three large groups of Aryan gangs in the prison system. The Aryan Circle, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, and then there's the Aryan Knights.
Isn't every gang in prison bad though? Aren't they all doing the same thing? They're all like stabbing each other. They're making shivs. By the way, because of a great film with Reese Witherspoon, I know how to make a shiv if I am ever in a jail cell.
It's a good skill to have.
Yeah, thank you, Reese Witherspoon, in Confessions of Trick Baby. I know how to do it. But they're all She's doing the fearsome. Same thing. It's a fucking great movie.
Well, but no, the thing is, though, they intimidate people on the outside as well. Not to mention they're an organized criminal gang. But they're not the only gang in the news. Have you been reading about the gangs taking control of Haiti right now?
Yes and no, but ultimately no, because I'm very biased with my news, whereas if it's not actively affecting my life, I kind of don't give a shit. Like, Kate Middleton has ovarian cancer. That's my call, ovarian cancer. I kind of don't give a shit.
You were crying this morning.
I was not crying. When you looked Kate
at,
Middleton.
You looked at, I saw you looking at your phone, just kind of sobbing. I'm like, what's wrong? And then you're like, nothing, nothing. And you quickly flipped that window closed, and I saw it was Kate Middleton's cancer diagnosis.
It was Kate Middleton's tits, and then they're going to cut them off probably because she got tit cancer. No, I'm calling it. I think she has like ovarian.
Abdominal cancer.
Yeah, it's ovarian because they can't admit that she has a uterus.
But regardless, Kate sends her thoughts and prayers to you, Kate.
I hope you
die. Two Kates who have a bond, special bond. No, anyway, I find it interesting. I like the news. I like to find things that interest me. Regardless of the proximity or how it affects my life.
But I like this 90 Day Fiancé news.
Pass on that. But there's criminal gangs. It's like the warriors in Haiti right now. These criminal gangs who are more powerful than Haiti's like government forces. They've attacked prisons. They released 4,000 other prisoners and other gang members. And they now control the airport. Like, they took control of the airport. It's almost like...
Escape
from New York, more than anything else. Escape from
Haiti. But, like, nobody wants to land in Haiti.
Yeah, no one wants to go there. But, yeah, I mean, they forced business and schools to close, drove an estimated 15,000 people from their homes in Port-au-Prince.
That sucks.
And now the prime minister, Ariel Henry, announced that he's going to resign once they get this transitional presidential council created to steer the country away from what looks like a civil war.
You can imagine that he did, like, you know, when he was resigning on the telly, and it's just like really close in where he's like, I'm resigning. And then the camera would pan out and there's just like the guys with like the gun to his head.
Yeah, I don't think he's back in Haiti.
On his pants.
He was, yeah, I don't think he's actually back in Haiti at the moment. He was in Kenya trying to recruit forces there.
Is he going to get them over on like a boat or something?
They said they're going to send over like 1,000 military personnel, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know.
That's probably why he's not.
I don't quite understand the connection. But what's going on right now, there's two gangs who have been in conflict for like, I don't know, 5 years. And it's really ramped up recently. But they control 90% of the city, like now. But it's one gang leader of the G9 gang, Jimmy Barbecue Chirizé. I don't know how to say his last name, but they could just call him Barbecue. And his group joined forces with other gangs. And so now G9 is saying they're a revolutionary organization that's going to oust the president and control Haiti. And they've made a nationwide alliance network called G20. But G20 has been at war with GPEP, which is the other gang that was formed in response to G9. And the head of GPEP is Jean-Pierre Gabriel.
Ooh.
And they're both in like a deadly, violent, bloody conflict to control Haiti.
I have seen pictures of Barbecue, and he looks like he could be in a 1980s hip-hop gang. He's got that kind of look going on. But Jean-Pierre just sounds sexier just because his name is Jean-Pierre. So if I have to choose a sexy terrorist leader here, I'm going to have to go with Jean-Pierre.
Well, Barbecue used to be a cop.
Oh, I'm going with Jean-Pierre, yeah. 100%.
I'm not quite sure if Jean-Pierre's background. I haven't really got into that. JP. But a couple of the other gangs that are out and about, and they're trying to like get them to join each other's alliances. There's the 400 Mawozos, which is just a gang of smugglers. There's Grand Ravine and the 5-Second, which are youth gangs. These are gangs of like 12-year-olds. And they're all trying to get them to join. The Brooklyn Gang, the Boston Gang, and the Canaan Gang.
What I would like to see is all the women of Haiti who are so fucking sick of all these men just being fucking men, just rise up on their own and just go at them with like kitchen utensils and just take them down.
Well, it made me think about that because I was thinking, like, I wonder if there's female gangs. But then made me think of you. Like, were you ever in a gang of, like, northern slags?
You know what? Like, I've always hung out with lots of boys. And one of my nightmare scenarios, it's always been a nightmare, is either a hen night or to go on, like, a destination hen night, like, where they make you go. I've denied everyone. It's like, and I'm also not being a bridesmaid. I love women and I like spending time with women, but I need some sausage there. I can't just be around a bunch of cackling hens.
Well, could being in a band is kind of like being in a small musical gang. So could you be in like a band like the Runaways or the Donnas?
The Donnas would have been funner than the Runaways because they were all pals from school.
I'm just saying a band of chicks. All chicks.
If I met the right girl, like me and Claudia could totally be in a band together and like have a lot of fun. But,
yeah, but
to meet two other people.
Would you have like a dude on bass and a dude playing drums?
Yeah, that we don't care about and we would interchange them.
I'm talking about an all-female band.
Well, maybe they could put a wig on.
I don't know. I guess you could have trans members. But, okay, let's say you were in a gang of Northern Slags. What would you call it?
Asian Babes.
Asian Babes? That's a band. And there are men in that band.
Yeah, I would reclaim it. Oh, no. Ching Vipers.
Ching Vipers. That's pretty good.
That's
Ching
always,
Vipers.
These were our names for Asian Babes. It was Neil Ian who came up with Asian Babes, so I have to give him props for that. We also, in the running, was Ching Vipers, which was mine and Bob's contribution, because Ching in Scotland is cocaine. And then the Beatles too.
Beatles 2.
The Beatles 2. Doing it better than the Beatles ever could.
That would have been nice because you'd have been right behind the Beatles
at
the record store.
And people might have been like, oh my God, there's a new Beatles song out. See? And then they would buy it. But ultimately, we dropped that because we didn't want people booking us for Beatles gigs.
Would you have covered the Meat Men's One Down, Three to Go?
We would not.
But just modernized it. Two down. Wait, three down, right? No, two
four
down, two
down is more. No.
I forget.
No, we just didn't want to be associated with the Beatles.
I like Ching Vipers, though. I could see a satin jacket.
I also have an all-female band that I would like to do. It's called the Ramonas. And obviously it's Ramones
sure
cover songs by girls. There's not one called the Ramonas.
I'm sure there has to be.
But I wouldn't be spelling it in like the Spanish way. It would be like Monas, as in we moan a lot because we're girls.
Oh, like M-O-A-N.
Yes, the Ramonas. And then
that seems more fitting.
Also, while we're on the subject, I wanted to do a King Diamond cover band where it's just mainly me and call myself Kate Diamond.
Yeah, but what about, would there be other girls in the band?
Well, obviously, again, you're just paying to see Kate Diamond, so it doesn't really matter who. It's like Coven. Who else is in Coven apart from Jinx Dawson?
Yeah, no one really knows. I guess I could see that. I could see that working, but that's not a gang. That's a band.
No, I've already chosen. It's going to be Ching Vipers.
There's got to be like 20 people in it. At least.
All right, the Charlottes. Then we'll just go classic. The Charlottes.
I guess not very fearsome. See, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start a gang of tattooed Jews.
Okay.
Like in their, I don't know.
Elizabeth
late 40s,
could join. Oh, Elizabeth
and we're all
going to
have nasally voices, and we're going to be called the Not Funny Diarrhea Club. NFDC.
What makes it not funny?
Our nasally voices.
That's
and the fact
true.
That we all host podcasts.
How are you going to get the tattooed Jews to actually join this club, firstly? I hope it's not shekels. Like, I hope nobody has to pay to join up.
No, I was
going to
put like an ad up at Cantor's.
Would you be like, what, $5 for
I'm not
everyone?
Paying them.
You can only, if you put on the ad, first 50 attendees get $5.
I'm not paying them.
Well, I think that's the only way
we're
going to
like
them.
Meet at Cantor's and maybe eat like, you know, black and white cookies.
I love
the black and whites.
Yeah, they're great.
Drink coffee and kind of talk about stuff. Probably complain a lot. Bitch about things. The prices of things.
Especially
at
Cantor's.
At Cantor's. The lox and bagels here. You know, I remember and it used to be $16.
Oh, so you're
24
all,
now.
You're all going to be granddads as well. So yeah. You're saying that my gang isn't going to be very fearsome because we're called the Charlottes after the Warriors. But apparently your gang is going to be super fearsome because what? They're going to save you money?
We're going to be intimidating because we're so annoying. And what we're probably going to say is like, stay away from the Charlottes unless you want to get herpes. That's what we're going to say. Anyway,
in your dreams.
This week, we're going to chat with an actual gang member.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. A gang member of a very, I guess, infamous LA punk gang called the Lads. LA Death Squad. His name is Jimmy Genocide. And back in the 80s, I mean, there were many punk gangs running around LA wreaking havoc. I didn't even know about this until we had listened to the NoFX audiobook, The Hepatitis Bathtub and Other Stories, where Fat Mike just talks about his run-ins with these various punk rock gangs of LA.
Yeah, and people getting stabbed and the huge fights and the riots.
And the riots. I mean, and they were like gangs at all the different venues and different territories around town. So this inspired Kate to dig a little deeper. And I don't know, how did you come across Jimmy Genocide?
I actually want to give a shout out to, it's a guy called Lurch on Reddit. And he had made a post kind of all about this. And like, he did a lot of the legwork for me. So I found Jimmy G for that. And then I just like binged. He's a great writer. So I binged his like WordPress site in a day.
Yeah, he's got a great site, jimmygenocide.com. And it's got all these stories of just, you know, being back in the scene, being part of the lads. And then pictures. The pictures are great.
Pictures are great. I mean,
it's like a time capsule.
There's also, I mean, Feral House, which is a great publishing company. They put out a book called Disco's Out, Murder's In, which has actually been made into a film. And hopefully we're going to get one of the authors of that book at some point this year. And we'll talk about, because that's a totally different gang.
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is there were gangs. Punk gangs, like they're like music gangs, like gangs based around music, but just really still violent, doing drugs. And I think it would have been fun. So Jimmy Genocide is going to share some stories with us. But before we get into that, let's chat about a much more fearsome and exclusive gang. I'm referring to the members of the Sick and Wrong Patron. Very fearsome. If you look forward to listening to this soul-enriching podcast every Monday, then all we ask is for you to sign up for the Patreon or Apple Podcast and just do your part to keep the show going. We do appreciate the support, and it's only $5 a month. That's all we're asking. You get $5 a month on the Patreon or Apple Podcast, and you get access to the Sick and Wrong Second Show, which is an entirely second show. You know, an hour of additional Sick and Wrong programming every week.
This week on Second Show, it is saucy.
This week on Second Show, we have a major announcement.
Don't say anything here. It's for Second Show only, D.
Well, we're going to chat about Kate getting a new job.
No.
At the Diaper Spa, which is this nursery-like business for adults who role-play as children and wear diapers. And I think it's amazing that Kate's willing to do something like that.
Well, I mean, the money's really good, and I am in LA right now. So, you know, my OnlyFans starts next week.
I think you'd be great as, like, the head nanny.
I'm very stern, and I'm very strict.
Do you know how to change a diaper?
I absolutely do not, and that's part of the joy. Come with me on the journey.
Change a diaper on an overweight, middle-aged man.
I would have no idea how to even start.
Well, you're going to learn, and that's like, these are transferable skills.
You know, whenever you start a new job, it's always the first, like, what, couple of weeks is always really scary, but then you soon, like, you find your groove, Stella gets her groove, and you just go for it.
All I'm going to say is wear gloves. But we get into that on the Sick and Wrong Second Show. It's only $5 a month. Get access to Sick and Wrong on Patreon and the official Sick and Wrong Discord, where you're going to see things that you wish you could unsee, but you can't. You can't. Or you can go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to Second Show, and a couple different ways there to support us. Patreon.com/Sick and Wrong. We appreciate the support. So let me play this quick promo, and then let's chat with Mr. Genocide about the LA punk gangs from the 1980s. Hey, Sick and Wrong listeners. If you're not currently a Sick and Wrong patron, you might be missing out on special moments like this one.
Well, that's the thing. If they didn't make money, then it's okay if you don't tip.
I mean,
they weren't making any money.
Yeah, they weren't making money. And you knew Erica Idle wasn't going to make money. Sometimes she'd make money when she would take one of her big-ass titties and smash a can. Like, she'd flatten a can with her tit.
I was going to ask if she did tit tricks.
Oh, yeah. She did a bunch of tit tricks.
Oh, yeah.
She'd just take her titty.
She was like the Gallagher of the fucking Gold Club. Smashing watermelons and shit.
For only $5 a month, you can enjoy these special moments. A bonus news story, extra phone calls, and an hour's worth of outtakes every week at patreon.com/sickandwrong. Sign up today, support the show, and keep it sick and wrong. But don't you ever think of me. Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for being on the show, man. It's great to talk to you.
And you are very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I got to say, Kate recently discovered your site and was just reading it like just nonstop.
I binged it.
Yeah, you binged it for like a week.
Yeah, as the kids say.
I always recommend people read my stories on the toilet because they'll kind of scare the shit out of you.
That does kind of work. Yeah, so we're going to get into it. We're going to discuss some of the stories. I kind of want to start at the beginning. So are you originally from L.A., born and raised?
No. Family's all from New York. Family came here to vacation. One of my uncles had moved here and became very successful supplying fasteners, like nuts, bolts, screws, to Dodger Stadium. Made his first $1 million. So they came here and thought, wow, it's a city paved of gold and the weather's wonderful. And within a year and a half or so, we had moved to California. So we were the East Coasters on the block. We were definitely the outsiders of the bunch. I come from a tough breed. You know, my mother was an old gangster too. You know, she was the 50s slicker, is still wearing these in those days too then.
Oh, fantastic.
The hot rod scene. She dated a guy who was in like a demolition derby guy, you know, like it was really a thing, you know? And then my father, he came from a whole Broadway theatrical thing. He was a director and a singer, and he always wanted to be famous. He was very close to Lena Horne and stuff like that.
Oh.
Formed, you know, had a whole bunch of stuff that it's supposed to be now at an all-black females university on the East Coast. I'm always short for the name on that one, but there's an exhibit for Lena Horne.
Oh, that's cool.
But he was in the closet. And he was a gay man that was in the closet.
He was in the theater.
You know, so. Yes. He was, you know, I mean, it, like, all the signs are there, man. And like everybody knew it but us, you know, it's sort of like one of those things like, oh, come on, like, you know. So when it came out, it came out. But during the time, you know, and this is why I think that it's best for people to just be whoever it is they are.
Oh, definitely.
If you're going to fight whoever it is you are, there's going to be some problems. And some of those problems existed in our household, from him being very abusive to my mother, being abusive to myself. And it really gave me a crash, you know, a crash into the adult world. I mean, this is a man beating
early
me
age
up,
too.
Get me to the ground and kicking me. So when you talk in terms of the story, the Battle Royale, these are beatings that I took at home.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you got on the street, it was like, give me a break, you know? So it was really nothing to me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you just, you know, get lost.
Well, you're used to it. Did he eventually come out and live as a gay man?
Yes. So my mother hired a private investigator, and they followed him around, and it came all out. And then it was a really disgusting divorce. And that was one of the reasons between the gangs and the drugs and all the troubles with that going on and my family problems, I joined the Navy, which was a good thing. You know, I went around the world and served honorably, and it was a cool thing. You know, it's funny. I had a club in the gang, like a gang in the Navy, you know, like six guys that ran around with me. We just got into terrible trouble, you know?
So it sounds like you had a lot of trouble at home. Did that cause you to like seek out like punk rock and a music scene and gravitate towards, you know, hanging out with ne'er-do-wells in gangs?
I was immersed in music because of my dad, you know, so he was always bringing albums home. Anything that came out, you know, like the new Police album or this or that, he was just curious and he was always listening. Everything. So I had a lot of musical, you know, like experience as far as listening to and having an ear. But I remember seeing Kiss play on Saturday Night Live on Halloween. And the minute I saw those guys, I remember saying to my dad, I want all of their shit at Christmas time. And I, you know, was like, boom, that was that. And that lasted a 2-year period. You know, I went to all their concerts and all that.
Yeah, who did you dress up as? Who was your Kiss member?
I didn't dress up. That was the thing.
I know many
people that did. Like a girl that I went with dressed up as Ace Frehley and stuff like that. But I never did. But then, you know, over the years, I walked into a friend's house. And we might have been skipping out of school early, you know. So we kind of sat down and we were smoking some weed. and he put on some he put on Black Sabbath, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's really great. It was really heavy, and I was like, well, this is really great. And he goes, well, because all the heavier songs, I'd be like, yeah, you know. He goes, well, have you ever heard of the Sex Pistols? And I'm like, no. Let me check this out. Well, by the second song in, I'm taking the album with me and recording it at home. And I am now changing my whole identity, you know. And I was already in a new wave and all sorts of the precursors to like the second generation of punk rock, because that's really what we're talking about from 1980 on.
Yeah.
Because they'd already done it in the 70s. And it's sort
of. You know, there's the New York Dolls and like the, you know, Stooges and all those bands.
LA music scene in the 80s was blessed. There's so many amazing bands from that time.
Amazing. Oh, like, you, yeah. So basically that's my life, you know. I mean, I had trouble in schools and stuff and all that kind of stuff. So when I found punk rock, all of a sudden, I remember the first time I ever went to a show. I mean, hey, this is like I was walking into a new family room, you know.
Yeah.
This is my new family room here. This is like everybody was listening to the same shit that I was listening to, or we weren't, and we were exchanging it. And it was this whole thing. And then it was like, how are you going to dress? How are you going to, you know, portray yourself?
Yeah,
and there wasn't Hot Top. Hey, there was no Hot Topic.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have the resources you have now, like the internet. So you went out to a used clothing store and you got, you know, some old slacks from like an old man would wear, you know, and you'd take them and tailor them down and stovepipe them and just different things, old man hats, stuff like that, overcoats, which we know people still even wear today. And that was the scene. And when you went to this to shows, it wasn't like a sea of leather jackets with spikes on them and everything exactly painted. You know, it wasn't. It was some guy that looked like he was from the disco era over there with his shirt down. And there was another guy who was like long hair, you know, with a beard, wearing a black flannel
DIY
shirt, you know.
Yeah,
and that was kind of the way it first started. Later, all of a sudden, these like Huntington Beach characters started coming in. These are guys that are like big jock, burly dudes, you know, and they get the flat tops, and they'd come in because they saw it on the news that you can go and beat the shit out of people, and it's okay. And the scene got really sketchy, man. And that was one of the reasons our club began. We really wanted to safeguard our scene and protect the people who we knew. Because there were these guys coming in, and you'd see a 14-year-old little kid get stomped, and he'd just go on there to see the show and have a good time. But these guys are taking it out on everybody. So we would set up shop and wait for them, you know, and give them a lot of ass beatings.
You kind of need to band together, especially when you got like outside groups coming in there. So what were which venues did you guys hang out at back then? Like, well, because that's the thing, that how do these guys from Huntington, these guys from the Valley, how do they know about which venues to go to?
It's everything was about flyers. So
you get a flyer.
Everywhere you went, if you saw one on the ground outside of the record store, they'd be in the record store. People would take them and toss them, you know, where the LA Weekly and those types of things. And that's where you'd get word of mouth. You know, that's where you got it from, you know. And then I remember just going to Moby Disc and you'd flump, you know, finger through records and you didn't know who they were. But
yeah,
the name of the song's pretty crazy and the fucking guys look pretty crazy. I'm buying this awesome shit, you know.
You know, I still select records like that. I just think if it's got a cool cover with a cool band name, if it's got a band name like, I don't know, Cat Piss, I'll be like, I'm going to buy this.
Yeah.
Take the gamble.
Yeah, like I've been listening to this band, Pissed Jeans.
Yeah, just Pissed Jeans. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, see?
It's a great name.
Great. Yeah.
So you were saying that the gang that you were part of is the LADS, the Lads, as I've been saying.
So yeah, so Lads stands for Los Angeles Death Squad. Originally, it was a Hollywood-based gang. Everybody that was in the gang was basically in Hollywood. But it was like maybe 10 guys. As these gangs started to pop around, because all of a sudden, you know, monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to have a crew and everybody wanted to hang out. So I knew guys from the Valley. There was this big gang called FFF. And they were like pretty gnarly guys, man. You know, they'd roll around. you know, packing. So you know, they were ready to go. And then you had Circle One family, which that dated all the way back to the germs, I think. Circle One, they used to do a thing where they do a cigarette burn on you, that kind of thing. And then, what's that?
I said, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's an initiation. That was the initiation, is you would get a cigarette burn. It was your Circle One. And then those guys, eventually, the band Circle One began with John Macias. And you probably, if you ever want to read or hear a great story, there's a Henry Rollins does a thing about John Macias. And it's like a little stand-up thing that he did. It's bizarre. It's crazy. And the stories are all true and scary. Yeah, he was a singer for Circle One, and he was the biggest, baddest dude you ever seen, man. He was a, 6'4", black, just stacked from, head to toe, shaved head, no eyebrows, just scary as fuck. I mean, I remember one time we were on Sunset. There were punk gigs playing like at all the different clubs, so it was like shit going on at the Roxy, shit going on at the Whiskey, and Gazzari's, which was a big heavy metal club, had a big show going on. And we're walking up and down the street just beating these heavy metal guys up.
I was going to ask about that. For no reason.
I mean, literally, I remember John attacking this guy, and he beats the shit out of him, yanks his hair out of his head, man. And
Jesus.
Then a bunch of metal guys see this going on, run across the street, come running up. We just sort of, and he looks at them and goes, "Well, let's see, man, you're about 150, 160 pounds. I'm going to eat every last bit of you, man." And these dudes just turned around and bye. We don't need none. They took their friend with them, but that's a type of weird. And the punk scene in that days, man, was a host of characters.
I can just imagine. You mentioned the Roxy, but were some of these other venues, like what about, I heard about Cafe de Grand, it's before my time.
Okay.
And Madame Wong's?
Yeah. Let me tell you a few of them. So Madame Wong's was really big.
In Chinatown.
Bards of Apollo was really big.
The Starwoods.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Starwood was huge.
Yeah.
And the Whiskey was huge.
Starwood
and like, the Whiskey Go-Go. So the Starwood and the Whiskey would have two shows a night, man. You could go to an 8 o'clock show at the Starwood and see a band, maybe two, hop in your car, fly up the street and go to the Whiskey and see another set of bands, the whole thing, And then the Starwood had this thing where like, when you bought a ticket, you also got access to this free disco that was in the back. And they played punk tunes and stuff, But the first time I ever went into that disco, we're sitting there, and a girl runs across a dance floor, grabs another girl by the hair, throws her on the ground, and drags her across the room.
What was that all about?
Yeah. You're like, I like it here.
I
got
to get her number.
Yeah, I mean, you would go into the auditorium area for the show, and the Starwood announcers would say, "Please keep the violence to a minimum." I mean, I was like, wait, what did that guy just say? And it was serious. It was serious. They were just beat the living shit out of each other at a point, it went from pogoing and softcore to bumping in each other to fucking beating the living shit out of each other. And then the stage diving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Man, you want to talk about people getting fucked up. I mean, I knew a friend of mine did a backflip off the stage of the Whiskey a Go-Go during 45 Grave. Both of his heels landed on the shoulders of a girl and just knocked her out, man.
Oh, wow.
Just like, holy hell.
So you were mentioning venues and like the lads were a Hollywood based gang.
Yes.
So like where did you hang out at? Like where was your territory?
So see, that's the thing. We were a phenomenon in the sense of gangs because wherever a show was, that's where we were.
Right.
So we could be in the Valley, we could be in Orange County, we could be, anywhere. But the reality was, is in time, we started to settle in. And the club we settled into was the Cafe de Grand.
Okay.
Oh,
that
okay.
is one of the first jobs that I ever had. And I was a security guy there.
where was
amongst
that
other
located?
Things, Jimmy.
Where was it located, the Cafe de Grand?
So the Cafe de Grand was right behind the Hollywood Palladium.
Oh, okay. All right.
Argyle.
Okay, like right on Argyle right there. I wonder what it is now.
So you'd have competing shows. You'd have shows at the Hollywood Palladium and then shows at the Cathé. And people would be coming back and forth. It would just overload that street. And it would be crazy.
I can imagine.
I can imagine that.
And that was like, I remember, like, I would hang out at the door and I would sell shitty speed, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it was garbage. It wasn't real. And I would hang out there just so often that Bernie, the doorman, one time he's like, hey, man, I got to take a fucking whiz. Can you just watch the door? And that's how it got me to a point where I could watch the door for him. I could be there. It was cool. And then all of a sudden the club was like getting all this pressure from the cops. Everybody was hanging out. Everybody's hanging out. You know, everyone wanted to go to the show, but more people started hanging out than went in it. You know, it was a party session all the way around. We had this alley back on the back street, and it was like between a business, and these people would just go back there and get fucked up.
I mean,
heroin. Yeah. I remember smoking PCP back there, you know. I mean, you just feel like, yeah, well, yeah, yeah. And brawls and fights, but then it's the graffiti and leaving their trash everywhere, and the businesses are like, hey, screw you, man, get out of here. So the owners and stuff kind of made a connection with our club, and they said, hey, you guys can come in anytime you want, but roll the streets. Get everybody off the streets. Tell them to go inside. Just tell them you're trying to save the club, you know? And that's what we did. And we did that for about a year, but we just weren't strong enough in a sense of the scene, because the scene just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, that we couldn't control something like that, you know? And it became very violent, you know?
It almost sounds like you guys are vigilantes, like the Guardian Angels or something.
Yes, and it's funny you say that, because the Guardian Angels used to come by.
Yeah, I was about to say, because they were around back then.
And they were, and they'd get beat up awfully a lot. they would get beat up an awful lot.
Yeah.
You know, you wear a stupid hat and you act like a fucking dumbass, you get your ass beat.
I must say, chicks can wear berets. But yeah, men.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Chicks can,
but
they'd show up and I'd say, here's my friend Woody, and Woody would fucking beat the living hell out of them. You know, it was just this crazy thing. You know, they'd be like, oh, I like your hat, you know. It'd be a thing. And it was really weird. In those days, those Guardian Angel guys were really like these homeless guys.
What? So really?
Yeah, man. They were like homeless people and really street people that all of a sudden you joined and they got your place to live and you got some food and you just hung around with them all the time. That's all you did. It was just another gang. Yeah.
Yeah. I always thought they were kind of just like the cherub of justice, like wannabe cops, you know, and then they couldn't be a cop and then they become a guardian angel.
But I don't think so. Most of those guys were just tough guys. You know, they just wanted to show their wares. You know, they were looking to show their ware what in any way. And now all of a sudden that could be sanctioned by law enforcement, in a sense. They would just go, well, I don't see anything, do you?
You know what I mean?
Now, what's funny is because we would, you know, us guys, we were always wearing, we had a weird look, you know, we'd always wear our hair black. We always had these leather jackets, these Perfecto jackets, always black. Cop shoes were the thing, you know, shiny shoes. And the cops would drive by at some point when we were doing this deal at the Cathé and literally like be like, and just keep driving. You know, and we'd be like, motherfucker, I'm like, we're selling speed and heroin out here. And they're just like, hey, how's it going? Because we had moved all the people off the street.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of helping them out.
After we sold to them, but you know.
But so what would happen when you were working the door, you're working at a Cafe de Grand, and then one of those other gangs show up, like the LMP, like the La Mirada Punks or the Suicidal Punks.
Loved those guys. Loved La Mirada Punks, man.
So you guys were cool with them. Did you have a rival gang?
Yeah, who was your main rival?
Oh, my God.
Was it the FFF?
Yeah.
Because they were just so dangerous.
No. So FFF were all good friends. They still are good friends. Unfortunately, their leader just passed away. Quite a story, by the way. He went out in a fiery blaze of death, from what I understand. Shit.
Traffic accident?
No, he shot his mom, shot himself, shot the dog, burned everything down.
Ooh, not the dog.
Okay, wow. All right, murder suicide.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Rough. Just like you could say, holy shit. And that only happened in the last couple of months.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. That's hard to hear that. Yeah.
So those guys were good friends. There was also some like West End punks, which were friends of mine. But, you know, like it's weird. Like now everybody knows each other. We always hung out with Circle One because, like I said, I used to pal around with John before I ever got into the gang, the lads, you know. But our biggest fucking rival was the Suicidal Tendencies gang.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
You guys were Bad Religion, weren't you? That was your your band.
That was our band, and that was our core, and the members of the band were in the gang. You know, Greg Graffin wore the jacket with the, you know, lad skull and bones on his jacket. It's even on the album. You know, it was us. We were, that was it. You know, they were my, like my mentors, man. I mean, I went to the studio with them when I was 14. I went with this friend of mine, this guy, Tony Henderson, who was friends with Brett Gerwitz's sister. And they just needed some guys to carry shit. So at 7 a.m, I get a call and from my friend Tony. He's like, hey, man, Bad Religion's recording their album today. Do you want to be there and go with us? I'm like, I'm getting dressed right now. You know?
Awesome.
I skateboarded over to his house. We skateboarded over to Greg Graffin's house, the singer. And, you know, I remember that he's sitting at a piano, man, and he's just doing his pipe work, you know, like singing and stuff. And I'm going, wow, this is going to be fucking nuts. And at that point, they had only put out a little EP, but it was the bomb. Wow. And yeah, it was just one of those things, just list over, over and over again, you know. And next thing you know, Brett Gerwitz pulled up in this big Westfalia, you know, van, and we all load up in the van, and we went and got their drummer, Jay Ziskrout at the time, loaded up his drums, went off, picked up Jay Bentley. He comes running out with his bass, you know, it's just one of those things. And we carted off to Track Record Studio. We were there all damn day. I mean, you know, they were our ride, and we didn't know what we were in for. It. This is an epic recording thing. I mean, it was all effing day. But during that day, it was like all these lads guys were there, and I wasn't in the lads. I was only 14. I was like a little pud, and I was like, wow, man, you know. And I remember going to the bathroom, like, just check them out. And like, well, these guys are fucking bad. You know, they were only 2-3 years ahead of me, but it was like, no, these fucking guys are like brutal. You know, they're like gnarly shit. So we stayed there all day. You know, it was a lot of drugs. A lot of drugs all day. You saw this shit going in and out, going in and out. And then at the end of the day, all these guys card off. You know, they're tired, they're beat, they leave, and we're still sitting there. And at some point, Bad Religion walks into the studio and they're like, hey, we're going to do some backup vocals. Do you guys want to sing with us? And we're like,
with all the lads?
Yeah.
Nice.
Fucking yes. Like, my ass is already out of the seat. You know, it's the weirdest thing. We get to the studio, and Brett Gerwitz doesn't have a guitar pick. He's like, oh, I don't have a fucking guitar pick. What the fuck am I going to do? And I just pulled one out and said, here you go. And that's the guitar pick that he used on the album.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, man,
cool. Yeah, how could hell be any worse? That guitar pick was on the whole album. Oh. That's my guitar pick.
Well, we're definitely going to end the show with The Voice of God is Government. That's the song you're referring to?
Yeah. Yes.
It was just cool that you guys were singing backup on that one. Then at that point, because you guys kind of had this bonding experience, is that how you got into the lads?
Yes. So they were all of a sudden having problems with other gangs that were getting bigger, and dudes were moving in from the, you know, from the beach area a lot more. It just, the scene was getting bigger and people were getting sketchy. You know, there were some sketchy people and they just needed more people. And all their guys at that point, most of them were very short guys. You know, they were, you know, it was a mixed crew. You had Filipinos, Hispanics, Blacks, Whites. Oh. Everybody was there. It wasn't
diverse.
Very diverse crew. And all of a sudden, Alex, who wanted to really recruit things and get things going and get things bigger, he just started picking up all the 6-footers. And I was 6'2". My friend was 6'4". And we were all guys from other clubs that had just made our name. And we stood above everybody else. So they kind of went and sort of cropped all the top numbers of all the different
cherry picked the big guys
popping around. Yeah.
So what was your initiation in the lads?
You know, in those days, they didn't beat you up. You didn't do anything like that, but I'd already showed my bones because I was at the Whiskey one night, and I'm standing there with my friend Lurch, who was a real good buddy of mine. And all of a sudden he says to me, hey, what are those fucking dudes up at the hill? Like on San Vicente, whiskey's at the bottom and it kind of goes up this hill to a parking lot. And at the top, there's about maybe 10 guys. And they got bandanas real low and they got the shirts on. And this is the first time I really kind of run into the like suicidal tendencies. And all of a sudden, this guy, Alex, who was the leader of the lads, kind of comes out. And he was one of the leaders. There were other people who were other elements of the club. But he came out and he sees them. And we're looking at these guys like, what the fuck is the matter with them? They won't come down the hill.
Were they just mean mugging you guys or staring at you?
They're just mad dogging us from the top of the hill.
Yeah.
And it's just me and one guy. And then Alex came out. And Alex fucking comes down. He says, do you know those guys? And I, at some point, I'm already agitated, you know? I'm like, it's just the way I am at that point in my life, you know? And I'm like, I don't know who the fuck they are, but they're going to get their fucking asses beat if they don't get the fuck the hell out of here. And they all hear me say that shit. And I just look at them. I go, come on down. Or get the fuck out. Do whatever you're going to do.
He called them out.
Fucking, man, the result, they left.
Nice.
They fucking left and didn't go to the show. And oh, that was the whole thing. Like, a friend of mine, John, who, like, you know, got in before me, he knew Alex. And he just said, Alex said to him, who do you know? He said, I got two guys right now I know who can do for you right now. And he gave me the call and then went down to meet Alex. And it was funny because I remember pulling up to Alex's house and says, oh, gee, fucking guys, hey, how's it going? That was it. You know, it wasn't. But then we had to go to a meeting. And in those days, because they always had a Sunday meeting. So you had to go to them every meeting.
Well, where was that? Did you guys have like a clubhouse or a meeting place?
No, we used to just do it at the park, man. So we would go to Poinsettia Park right in Hollywood.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And
yeah,
we used to hang out there a lot. Until,
that's actually around the corner from us right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there, we live right
there. There was just one morning when we all went there for a meeting. And there was a guy there who had given us some shit the night before. And he didn't end well. So we didn't go do the meetings there anymore. We decided to move it to Pan Pacific Park. And then we started doing the meetings there. But I was at the Poinsettia Park that, in the beginning, and that was where I was accepted in. A lot of those photographs, you'll see me like sitting on a park bench and stuff like that. That was the Poinsettia Park. And what it was is you had, you know, 45 guys that they went around and said, all right, and they point to you and go, this guy here, what do you think? And they'd have to give you the nod. And if you didn't get a nod, you can go fuck off.
Oh, you know? So there's no like 10-man beatdown situation. It was just like you get the nod.
You know, I always try to say to people, you know, in those days, like a lot of us kids came from abusive households.
Of course. Yeah.
So to go and have your friend beat you up would be fucking damn fucking stupid. And I wasn't going to take it. Nobody else was going to take that kind of shit.
Nah, definitely. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So is that when you would get the armband as well?
Yes. So originally the first 10 guys all had it on their leathers, but that became a problem because you couldn't take it off and disappear into a crowd.
Right.
So we started with the armband thing. We started having these armbands and we'd wear those. And that was an easy way because you could take it off and disappear when the cops came.
What was the armband? Put it on. Like what was on it?
Yeah, it's the
Oh, you have one.
Oh, awesome. Well, Is this your original one? I do, but
I can't show it to you now. I'd have to dig it up. But it's the logo. Oh, shoot, I don't even have one. It's our, let's see, where, no, don't have anyone here. I got them in the other room. It's our logo, basically. And you can see that on my website and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's the skull and bones, and it has a big DS. And in the skull, it has, you can see it's written kind of like L.A. And
so L.A.D.S.
There's been all these different, yeah. So it's like the skull here has an L.A. on it.
Oh, that's right.
And then
right.
It has a DNS.
I saw that on your site.
And yeah. Now, the artwork on it was sort of like pulled from a flyer, from an old punk rock flyer, which like UXA was the band. And that was hidden out from and secreted from me for many, many years until I finally found that out. I didn't even know, you know. Like where the design came from. The other half of it, like the bones, if you notice the bones are sort of twisted and kind of odd shape and a weird design, you'll see it if you look online. There's a great, what do we call him? A clothier, a manufacturer clothier. His name is Mark Vachon, and he's in Hollywood. He's a part of the gang, part of the club, And he basically did all the clothes for Guns N' Roses, and Stone Temple Pilot, and like he does hats and pants, and he was selling $500 corduroys at Macy's at one point. You know, he was doing really well. So he's kind of the one that I think he kind of did the little artwork on the bones and stuff.
Fantastic.
So that's kind of his input. Again, it was always somebody putting something in. You know, that was a thing in those days. It wasn't like you had a boss who ran everything. Everything was very democratic. Those meetings on Sunday, if you had a problem with somebody, you'd straighten it out. If you, you know, our directives for the week, like we're going to go here, we're going to go to this show, we're going to be at this party, we're going to, you know, like they give you shit, like you knew what to do, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned the rival gang was like suicidal tendencies, which is weird because that's not even a gang. It was just like dudes that were into suicidal tendencies.
No.
And there was a gang.
So I go to a club in early days. This is here in the Valley. It was called Godzilla's. It was fabulous.
I've heard of this
great
place.
It was a bowling alley that was converted into a punk club. Cool. And it had some of the best shows there. I got into a fight with this guy named Jay Adams. He was a very professional skateboarder. He was in a movie, I believe, as well, made after him about Dogtown and Z-Boys.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Something like that.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I actually owned one of his Jay Adams Z-Flex boards when I was a kid and never knew who he was or anything about him, really. I went to to Godzilla's one night. I was slamming. We were in the big room. I don't know who was playing. It's a long time ago. And all of a sudden, these two big skinheads, like, single me out, pull me out of the crowd, like, hey, man, you just fucking hit my friend. Now, this is slamming, man. This is chaos. You're taking your life in your hands in those days. You know, people are fucking rough.
Exactly.
And I don't know what the fuck, like, maybe I hit him, maybe I didn't hit him, but like, hey, no harm, no fucking foul. Bring it on back, you know?
Of course.
Well, these two dudes sort of stand there like they're deciding what they're going to do with me. And all of a sudden, this guy comes racing right at me, straight threat between the two of them. And it's Jay Adams. Well, I had been doing like Hapkido karate for maybe 2-3 years at that point. I grabbed him by his neck, by the back of his head, and I kneed him in the face until he was unconscious on his feet. And his two skinhead friends picked him up and staggered him away. And at the time when they got ready to stagger him away, they both looked at me like, what the fuck has happened? And my friend, this guy, this black guy friend of mine, Eric Magoo, he pulls me off of them and he says, those guys, you want to fuck with those guys? Those guys are Venice. Those are Venice 13 guys. That's the precursor to the suicidal gang.
Okay.
So it wasn't necessarily affiliated with the band Suicidal.
No, they were. They were.
He was in the gang.
If you look at their first album cover, Suicidals, there's one of the album covers, and there's all these guys wearing shirts. Those are the gang members that followed the band, man. They would have this guy who did like this great artwork. The fucking artwork's amazing, you know. Like we did the leather things, but they had these like sort of like dress shirts that they would always wear, and they'd have these amazing skulls and just, you know, like crazy shit, you know, like blood and guts and all kinds of stuff. But it was suicidal. And if you look at their album covers, you can see all those shirts. They're represented on one of the album covers.
I have to check that out.
And those are all the gang members that were a part of that crew. And they're still around. I mean, like, I know guys, like my friend, he joined another crew in this later time because our shit was like a warrior school. So, like, I know guys that, like, they're in fucking Vagos. They're in like DMS, they're in, you know, Peni, like the fucking gang, the prison gang, you know. I mean, you know, guys just went wrong, man. I mean, didn't stop,
too far.
You know, where I stopped and put a break on it. And I'd come into the scene and dip my toe in here and there, you know, once I realized how bad and dangerous it was in the sense of drugs, man, drugs and just. And
just the violence too.
Well.
I mean, were the skinheads like a major problem? Like it seems like, because even now in Orange County, there's a lot of skinheads. So I imagine back then there probably were a lot.
And I mean,
of skinhead
in Britain
gangs.
At the same time, the skinheads were doing the exact same thing.
They had what is it? Toehead skin crew or toeheads? They called them toeheads because they looked like the fucking toe.
Yeah.
And, really, it was like some gang, the toehead crew. There was a bunch of different ones. You know, they weren't like that then. That became much later. Like, as the 80s progressed in 85, 86, 87, that's when the Nazi skinheads and red suspenders and,
boots.
Oxblood Doc Martens.
Yeah, it just sort of kind of changed, you know.
I grew up in Detroit, and the skinhead scene, I mean, they were pervasive. And so you'd see them almost every show. You'd see those guys just roll up, just fucking assholes. Yeah. Not even there to enjoy the show. They just wanted to fight.
What was the name of the gang in Detroit?
Oh, there are a lot. Rahoa was one. God, I don't even remember. This is so long ago. This is like early 90s.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like you'd see those guys be like, oh, they're bad news. You know? Yeah. But they were the ones that you're talking about, the red suspenders.
And... Yeah, like the gang FFF, they took a whole Nazi turn. You know, they were not that. And then they'll, like, I don't know, you know, just change. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, they had a lot of guys that got arrested and went to jail.
Yeah.
If you get into California, you know, if they stick you into the youth authority, you're already beginning segregation. You get into the California prison authority, you're continuing segregation. And you're learning to be segregated. Yeah. We have segregated prisons in one of the most liberal states in the nation. And they did it for safety, for, you know, gang fights and all these things. But it forces you to just band up with your own race, and they're the only ones you can trust. And you get out and you still believe that shit.
You're probably covered in white supremacist tattoos. So it's like you kind of gravitate
to
that.
And it's too late now, because now you ain't getting shit from, you know, after that's done. So, once you pop your chair and put all that shit all over you. Yeah.
So before you kind of mentioned the Warriors, and we've talked a lot about men, but were there any female gangs? Like, is it the Charlottes and the Warriors? And tell us about the groupies too.
We were the lads. We also had a girl crew called the Gods.
I love it.
Dangerous broads, man. There were chicks that just fuck up guys.
Awesome.
They would fuck up guys. You know, I mean, one of my good friends, Becca, she's like, I called her the grandma Washington of the lads. You know, she's just been around that long. You know, she practically stitched her armbands, and she's a sober coach. And I think she works in drug rehab for people. She really does a really powerful job, and it's really good.
Oh, wow.
But she was, shit, man. She just beat fuckers up, dude. You know, she'd come in, this little, and just boots on and fucking kick you one, and it'd be over, man. You know?
Because girls are vicious when they fight. There's no rules for girls. We'll go for eyes vicious, and hair and throat. Yeah. Like, there's no rules when a girl fights.
Yeah. When I got into the scene, there really weren't chicks. There really wasn't. And when there were, they were brutal. And then later it changed, you know, it became more popular maybe and widespread. People were like more interested in just going to a show and see what it might be like. And some amazing women just started showing up on the scene. I remember one time my friend coming, like I went somewhere on a weekend somewhere else, and he comes back and says, I went to this party. You wouldn't believe the women that were there. I'm like, really?
Did the lads have groupies though?
Oh. Sick groupies. Yeah, really bad ones.
Why were they
like,
sick?
even like in my adult years, I'm in my 40s, and like we'd go out and kind of hang around and pal around. We started doing like punk rock bowling. We had like the lads bowling team, and we'd do that, you know?
That's
and
we'd go girl. Around,
and man, I remember a chick one time took me back to her room and told me that fucking me would be like fucking a rock star because I was in the lads.
What a compliment.
That's
I was
cool.
Like, well, then let's get on with this right now.
What are you waiting for?
Why haven't we finished yet?
I must say, that's one of my favorite parts of the NoFX book, is because they're all like, obviously not Fat Mike, but the other guys are all like so embroiled in the scene too. So NoFX were all like part of the LA gangs. That's how I first heard really about the LA gangs. The punk
Fat Mike story. Fat Mike story.
Oh, go on.
So Fat Mike comes walking up to the cafe with a boom box. Now back in those days, that shit was a lot of money, man. But the big one, you know, like Run DMC would walk around with. You know, the thing was as big as a TV. Okay, he comes walking up, and there's like five lads sitting there, and they're all addicted to heroin, and they see him come walking up with this fucking boombox, and they just look at him straight up. Mike, give us the radio, Mike. And he's like, oh, come on, man. I just fucking got the fucking and look, we can beat you up or you can just give it to us. Because you see these dudes here?
Oh, man.
They're junking. And they are hurting. And they're going to fuck you up. He gave him the radio.
He had to.
I know. Got and who knows? They probably got $20 for the freaking radio. It was worth like a couple hundred. Who knows, you know? Come on.
Yeah. I think Fat Mike can afford like a lot of ghetto blasters.
Can probably well, you certainly can now room. From what I hear.
But have you been to his punk rock museum in Vegas?
Oh, I haven't. I haven't been there either. I've been questioned about bringing stuff down and stuff, you know? And it's kind of weird. I have a really huge, like I mentioned, a flower collection.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of art. I have a couple of pieces of artwork as well that are framed and nice and probably very expensive. And I don't know that I want to donate them at this point.
No, you
keep
them.
I need
to
scratch.
You keep them.
If that makes any sense, you know?
No, they're yours.
I've kept them and enjoyed them, but I know I want to sell them and maybe give them out to people, you know? And there are some doubles that I'll probably turn into the museum anyways, because there's a lot of stuff. You know, I have like Bad Religion flyers, like up at the Yin Yang. I have, you know, Gerwitz or Brett used to do, you know, he was in art school and he would do these really amazing artworks on some of the flyers. And I have some of those, you know, so, and
yeah.
Those are obscure. Really
obscure. That's the thing. I know they were approaching a lot of people that I know too, just asking for things to be donated, which is cool because other people can enjoy them, but. I don't know. You're going to get it back.
You know, maybe this will go one day. You know, maybe this will go. I have my armband.
Your lever would be great. So you had a Fat Mike story, but tell us the Glenn Danzig story.
Yeah, that's
because I in particular like this story because I'm a Misfits
fan.
Did you knock him out like that guy from, what was that band, the Northside Kings?
No. It wasn't a knockout, boy. Let me tell you. But it was a knockout anyways because what it really it showed was is this is you, man, and this is how he's always been.
Oh, yeah.
He's a professional. Let's just say he's a professional.
Definitely.
And professionals don't take fucking shit too easily. You know what I mean?
Oh,
they
I
believe,
totally
I
get
know
it.
My way. This is my way, and we're going to fucking do it this fucking way. Well,
yeah, definitely.
It was at this point where Black Flag had gone around. They toured the country, and they lost their drummer, Robo, to the band The Misfits. And one of the very first times that the Misfits came to town and decided to play, they played at the Whiskey A Go-Go. I went to go see them and we're there. And first band was Levi Dexter and the Tribe. Just a side note, greatest band ever.
Cool. I don't know them. I'll check them out.
Levi Dexter, you can find his stuff. He was an old rockabilly guy from England. So he's like the real rockabilly guy, you know. And
I'm surprised I don't know him.
Just a great show. He opened for them. Everybody was loving him. Then they do, the lights come down and the band, The Misfits, comes out. Now, this is when they're wearing the makeup. They got the hair that's coming down.
It's like
and
that,
it's hey. never been seen before. Well, they walk out and the lights are low. And as the lights start to come up, from over my corner, my shoulder, I hear, ooh, scary. And that's the beginning. What I realize is over my shoulder is Doug Bukowski, the bass player for for Black Flag.
What's his name? Forget.
So his last name is Dukowski. I call it, there's a story I wrote called the Dukowski incident. Again, gensgenocide.com. So so I realize who's standing over here, and it's Dukowski, the bass player for Black Flag, and it's Dez Kadena.
Oh, Dez Kadena,
yeah, he was singing for them
at the time, yeah.
Before Rollins,
yeah.
And he's standing there, and we're just in our little group, you know. And they look down at us, and they look, hey, what's up? You know, we all knew each other. That was the way the scene was. It was the smallest thing, you know, and. As the thing starts going, they do their first song. They stop. Dukowski starts yelling, all right, Robo, woo! Next song goes through. Opening up, the sound opens up again. It's quiet. Woo, Robo, that was bitching, dude. Now, we see him doing this, and we also see Glenn not so happy. He doesn't seem to like that. So they roll into a few more songs, and he does it again. But now he does it with some other folks that are there now, and then we see him doing it, so we start doing it, so everybody's fucking doing it. So every fucking time a song stops, it's like, Robo, that was awesome! Woo! Robo, keep going!
Dancing's getting jealous at this point.
Oh, yeah, Glenn.
Yeah, you're bruising his ego.
Pissed off. We're fucking heckling the shit out of him. You know, so then they start their songs. People are getting up on the stage, bumping into him, you know, purposely fucking with him. He's getting pissed, you know, he's just getting pissed. And we just, that was the whole night. We just kept giving him the fucking business the whole night. But greatest show ever.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, that's like how many people see Misfits like in their prime. Yeah. I mean, that'd have been great.
It's funny because I saw the footage of him. I saw the footage of him getting knocked out and you go like, yep, that's him.
Yeah, yeah.
Turn it down a notch, buddy.
Did you ever go by his house when he lived in Los Feliz on Franklin?
He had a place that he was selling.
That place. Oh, it's the one in Los Feliz. No, Los Feliz. It's on Franklin. Kind of.
It was in that. Yeah, it was a mess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one with the mattress on the floor.
I saw the listing, and it was like a house full of dust, basically. Yeah.
And just toys and a lot of dust. Floor.
Basically, after everyone took the internet and slagged it off and basically made loads of fun about it, he took it off the market because he couldn't handle. He just can't handle it, can he? He's only got tiny little shoulders. He can only take so much.
Yeah. Oh.
What was the most violent show you ever went to back in the day?
Was it the Olympic Auditorium?
Yeah, was that the Olympic Auditorium?
Was. Yeah, that's just the end all be all. I mean, that was really the decider of what the fuck you were going to do for your future, man. You know.
So what happened?
Okay, so we go to the show and we're hanging out, and that's all we did. We didn't go in. You know, we hung out and we were hanging out and. I was with some buddies and we see these three like suicidal guys walk up to the box office window. In those days, you had this long box office. You know, you didn't have the internet where they put it on your phone. You had to go out to get a ticket at the window. So there's this window area and it's like a series of windows that is partitioned by a series of metal poles and then a huge parking lot for the Olympic Auditorium.
Where was that actually, real quick, the Olympic?
Oh my gosh. It's... On Olympic?
It's on Olympic. Like in K-Town? Yeah. Or like
it's in one of the most fucked up places you want to go. Like that's one of the places in the city right now. I think there's a gang injunction. That's where they shot a cop over there. It's like all the where the under the freeway passes. All the fucking
All the way down by the 10 down there. Yeah, so that's kind of sketchy.
Already a sketchy place area. To go to.
Already sketchy when you go there. I went there when I was a kid at like maybe, you know, 10 with my grandmother and we saw wrestling.
Oh, fantastic.
We saw like Andre the Giant.
Amazing.
You know, Eddie Blassie. Oh, you know, like all those like those early guys,
classic,
you know?
80s wrestlers,
Which was, again, great. You know, one of those great moments. So we go to the show. We're standing there. I was with like just two buddies of mine. So it's just three of us. But the club is there, and there are multiple clubs there that night. And we see these three suicidal guys come moseying on by. So we're like, well, what are they doing? We started following them. We follow them across Olympic, I guess is what it was, and then down this alleyway that ran down. And at about midway, we started brawling with them. You know, we just say, hey, we're here to get down. You know, you're suicidal. We're fucking lads. Let's get fucking down. We start getting down. And we were beating their asses. We were just taking them out. And all of a sudden, this little black kid comes running out of nowhere, man, with a freaking teeny little knife and starts swinging that at a friend of mine. And we realize, oh, well, what the fuck, you know? But even though he's swinging the knife, like he's not willing to initiate and go any further. He's just trying to get his friend.
He's trying to scare you, yeah.
Yeah, you know, trying to get us away from him. So we march off away. We kind of go, fuck this, and we start walking away. But we get down halfway down that alley, and, man, you hear some shit going on at the other end of the alley. And we turn and look, and the fucking whole alley is filled with fucking suicidals.
Oh,
and
shit.
They're like, dude's pointing at us, and they just go, you know? And, I mean, I'm like, holy shit, let's get the fuck out of here. And we start running, and I'm the slowest of the bunch. Apparently, and I get tackled by this black kid. I roll over on my back. He punches me. I punch him. Well, then about like 10 dudes surround me and just kick the ever loving shit out of me.
Oh, man.
My elbows are fucked. My hands are raw. My knees are just, you know, you're just doing
this. You're just
this
protecting
number.
Your face at that and, point.
Yeah, you're protecting your head, man.
Yeah.
You're just trying to survive. And then at some point, I feel something going in the back of my jacket. Like someone's hit me in the back of the jacket. But then every time they pull, it's going like it's enough.
Oh, man.
And this fucking dude is stabbing me in the fucking back. He stabbed me 3 times in the back.
Oh, shit.
But I had a leather on and it, you know, only penetrated just so much. So, you know, it didn't puncture a lung. It didn't, you know, paralyze me or a million other fucking things
that
could have happened.
Very lucky.
It was scary, you know, like, I mean, so a friend of mine sees them doing that to me, comes up and basically starts attacking them on his own. And the crowd sort of broke up and backed off. And I just stood up like, hey, you know, because again, growing up the way I grew up, it was like, all right, we're good.
Yeah.
Who now that I'm on my feet, who
Let's
wants
go,
it, you know, and nobody did. And there was some little this, little that, a few people paired off, but everybody was beat. They were all like, fuck, you know. So we go our way, they kind of go their way. And actually what it was is I think we even had more lads had started to show up at that point to back us.
Yeah.
So yeah, your backups.
You know, and it quelled. We mosey over back to the Olympic Auditorium and these guys from FFF. And again, these are guys that they're beyond discussion in some ways, because like they were really like a paramilitary group. They would carry guns, they had weapons, but they also had fucking first aid. So they patched me up real good, and I get ready to go, and we line up now in front of that box office, and we are now taking over the entire parking lot. It's lads, FFF, and Circle One gang all just fucking hanging out. 20 of them come marching in like they're the damn Marines, you know, all with their shirts. My friend Alex just goes,
wait, suicidals? Like,
yeah. 20 of these suicidals marched in like they were the Marines. And right in that open area between the parking lot and that window, that kiosk window area. And Alex whistles, you know, gave us the command, and everybody just mobbed the shit out of those guys, started beating them up right there. They started trying to escape into the street. They were hit by cars, knocked down, picked back up, beat up again, chased them then down that same alley where I had been stabbed, down to a McDonald's that was down there. We get to this McDonald's, man, and the black guy who had stabbed me, we're chasing him. And his name is James. Apparently he's alive and well today and apparently has a family. God bless him as well.
Oh, that's good.
So, you know, it's nice to see the people survived, because
of course
we weren't going to survive. A lot of us weren't going to survive. And a lot
exactly.
of us didn't.
Yeah.
You know, our early wave of all those guys are all heroin dummies, and they're all dead. And not only were they heroin dummies that were dead, but then they sobered up. Some of them even sobered up and waited until they were 40 and then died because of stupid fucking heroin.
Yeah.
So we chase this guy who had stabbed me, and there's a, you know, we'll chase him. I mean, it's everybody. It's just, it's like the fucking Warriors movie, you know? I mean, it's just fucking, bah, right? And he tries to jump into the drive-through window of the McDonald's to escape, but they close the window on him. So he runs over, man, the guy runs over, and there's a guy sweeping, you know, with the broom, and he grabs the broom like he's going to, I'm going to fucking get you with this. Well, everybody grabbed that broom, broke it into like a couple pieces, and just proceeded to beat him the fucking death.
Oh, man.
You know, like even like the broom, you know, the long broom things. I'm like, conk him on the head. You know, it's like, holy shit. He runs around in the front of McDonald's, you know. And you know where the window was? They always had the painted window where there's like the big M. He's on the window like banging, help, help, they're killing
bloody.
Me. If you've ever seen the movie Ghostbusters, when Rick Moranis runs from the scary monster.
The monster's chasing him at the window at that
yes,
restaurant.
And he ends up at the Tavern of the Green. That's him. And all of a sudden, like just literally devoured. And everyone was just. And then I remember coming off of that and walking away from it and seeing like a whole line of new guys from a gang. Right. And I see these guys lined up. And they're handing out knives.
Oh, man.
Because each of these young guys are now, that's how they were going to get in.
Yeah, it's like the next generation.
That's their initiation,
you know?
If you want to be in the gang.
Yeah, they were there and they were lined up and it's like, okay, here's a knife, now fucking go.
Yeah.
And they fucking did, you know?
Wow.
In those days, you know, it was mostly just knives and sticks and bottles. It wasn't so much guns.
Yeah, that's I was right. about to say, because if you got into a brawl now, there'd definitely be guns.
Everybody pulls out a gun now.
Yeah. Like, I don't think...
You know, I just find it classless. Like knives, sticks. There's just
well, you know, you had to be a tough motherfucker. You had to be able to take a beating. You know, it wasn't just about always being a tough guy and beating everyone up, because you ain't going to beat everybody up. You ain't badder than everybody else.
Yeah.
You had to be able to take a beating.
Yeah.
And put up with it like a man.
It's too.
You know, that's if you go to the joint, if you go to the joint, they're gonna fucking check you the minute you walk in. If you don't fucking stand up for yourself, you're gonna be a wet nurse somewhere, man.
Exactly. Everyone's going to know that.
So was that a turning point for the lads then? Because the lads breaks into two factions.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't break into two factions. So what happens is
okay.
It is a turning point. There are a lot of people that go, fuck this, I don't want to go any further. And there's other people who say, I'm down as fuck.
So where was your headspace at this point? So after this battle, the next day, what were you thinking?
I'm thinking, holy fuck. I don't know if I want to keep doing shit like this.
Like, how old were you at this point?
I'm 18.
Yeah.
18 years old. You know, I'm young.
It's so super young.
Like, I'm beat to death. You know, I wake up and can hardly walk, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, I don't know. Am I in for all this shit? What for, you know? What am I going to get out of it?
Yeah, what's the point?
And then I just kept watching all my fucking idiot friends getting into drugs and dying.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, too, you know, there's always this element of like, there's a ladder in life, you know, like my mom's generation, you know, Elvis shook his hips and everybody freaked the hell out, you know. And then in my generation, we did what we did. And in the 90s, it was Marilyn Manson, you know, wearing fucking lingerie, you know, and everything always goes up another rung. And that's the same way it was with gangs. Like, it was just like, okay, I was in a fight. Great. Now I'm going to stab somebody. Great. Now I'm going to shoot somebody. And I'm going to, I mean, in a robbery.
Go to prison or whatever. I mean, this is kind of the path.
Yeah. I mean, like one of my friends, Neil, he kind of became the bouncer at the, God, what the hell is the name of it now? I'll remember it in a minute here. It was a place in Orange County and it was considered like that crossover punk metal era. And, he was the head of security there. Eventually, he had to leave because he removed someone's eyeball one night.
It's like Roadhouse.
But he started a gang called Southside Lads, and they became much more dangerous than we ever envisioned ourselves to be. They were selling, you know, all sorts of, you know, crystal meth, I think, was a big thing.
Yeah, especially down in Orange County.
They make a lot of money off it, yeah.
Yeah.
They make a lot of money off of that. You know, they basically had like a whole hotel where they were running every shit, all the shit out of that. And then they were involved in fucking counterfeiting, you know.
It's like more like organized crime here rather than a bunch of dudes just hanging out in jackets, you know.
They were involved with like Pablo Escobar.
Oh, wow. So that's like that's like real organized crime at this point.
And yes, and counterfeiting money. And there are photographs of them with like whole dining tables full of money. You're just like,
God damn. Did the other lads just kind of grow up and go their own way?
Some did, you know, like all the guys from Bad Religion, they're still playing, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some became famous for art. Some became famous for the clothing industry, like I mentioned. Others became fucking losers and dead.
Yeah. Drugs.
We still hang around. We still have, you know, the group, you know, I mean, they still hang out. I don't so much because I'm just an old dude. I'm 57 at this point.
I was about to say, like, you still going to Poinsettia Park?
Yeah, shit. I went and stood there at Fear. I was like ready to fall down, man. You know? I'd stand here all night. Shit, I need a seat and a martini.
Yeah.
So, you know, it starts to change, you know, you start to evolve, man. But, you know, some people change for the better. Some people change for the worse. Myself, yeah. I mean, I'm generally sober. I don't do major drugs. I drink two to three if I do, which is very rare. I like marijuana. I smoke cannabis because here in California, we have that legality.
You can do that.
We're legal.
Exactly.
And it's, and you know, really, it's really because like I'm older. My fucking neck's bucked up. My back's bucked up. All that slamming
you got
shit.
Stabbed
no good
a
for
few
me,
times.
Man, you know?
Damn stage judge just went,
oh, really did a number on me, you know?
So living in L.A., is it inevitable to run into, like what happens if you're at a flea market or something, you run into one of the guys from the Suicidals? Like, do they ever recognize you? Like, does that happen?
Yeah, I went to an art exhibit one time. You're now seeing my likeness, which I have hidden for probably about a decade or more. I remember going to an art studio probably around that time and walked in. It was for an artist who's a photographic artist. I forget the guy's name, but it was off of off of Fairfax. And I walked in and the whole room was full of Suicidals.
Oh my God.
The whole fucking room. I got a whole fucking room. I'm like, who the fuck invited me to this shit? You know, like, what the fuck is going on? You know,
just put your hat
so I'm
down.
Standing there and it's no, fuck no. I mean, you're not getting away on that one. And, you know, they're in our town. So they ain't going anywhere if we wanted to keep them there. If, you know?
Yeah.
So a friend of mine was there from FFF and he's just a fucking monster. You know, he's a meat muscle. And we were standing there and one of their big shot callers walked up, you know, sort of looked us up and down, gave us the nod, and then took off. And that was the end of it, you know, squashed. Now, friends of mine who were like, really like one of my friends, this guy Payaso, who was like a little bit younger generation than ours, like my group, he's hung out with like Mike Muir and shit from Suicide and made amends. You know, these are people that have all kind of shook hands and said, it's cool, you know, it's squashed because...
Water under the bridge at this point.
How fucking old are you going to keep
the grudge exactly.
up, man?
Yeah. Water under the bridge. You know? Well, Jimmy, I got to say, you got some great stories. I want people to go check it out. Go check out Jimmy's website, jamesgenocide.com, and you can read some of the stories, check out some of these pictures. They're kind of amazing. You're also on Instagram and YouTube at Jimmy G Skeleton Crew. I have one more question. I don't know if Kate does. Did you ever go to Jumbo's Clown Room back in the day? Was that like a spot?
Yes.
Jumbo's is my favorite.
But, you know, really as an adult, you know, in my 40s and stuff, or late 30s, early 40s. And I knew a lot of guys would go there because they were all dating the girls there, man.
Nice. Yeah.
It's a cool joint.
And that's a whole other story, my friend.
We'll have you back on the show, Jimmy.
Yeah, we definitely have to have you back on the show. And when you come out with a podcast, definitely hit us up. Because we'll promote it and give you a shout for sure. But thanks for being on the show, man. It's been great talking to you.
I appreciate the attention. And again, hopefully you keep looking at jamesgenocide.com. Take a look. I'm going to be writing some other stories. Some other things will come out. And again, we're going to probably put out a book and stuff too. And then that whole podcast should be fun.
Looking forward to it.
Hey, guys. It's me, Steven. I'm a huge fan of your show. Thanks to your awesome coupon code, Diddle, I can buy myself loads of good sex toys. Since both of my wives died, and my Lou Gehrig's disease got pretty bad, let's just say things in the bedroom got pretty boring. But thanks to AdamandEve.com and coupon code, Diddle, D-I-D-D-L-E. I am now a new man. Thanks.
You're charging power get your dream. And now you're full of energy.
It's Kate Rambo. We got a couple phone calls to get to. People, you can call the Sick and Wrong Hotline, 323-522-4032. Or you can just send us an email. Email us an MP3. Sick and Wrong Podcast. @gmail.com. We do want to hear from you. Share anything. We don't even care what you want to talk about. We just want to hear your voice.
We miss you.
We miss you. This first call we have here is from the Swede. He actually called in with a two-parter.
Talk.
I've been saving it. We're going to play this first part on the show, and the second part will be a Patreon exclusive.
Ooh, sexy Swede.
Well, that's the thing with the Swede. He does kind of like these soundscapes.
Yeah, the reproduction. So the second part you have to go to the patron to hear is hard.
You'll have
hard
to go
work.
To the patron to hear that.
I've always had a suspicious interest when it comes to World War II. But when I suggested surprising then Mrs. Swede with celebrating New Year's in Krakow with a visit to Auschwitz, my friend scoffed at me.
That's a hell of a New Year's.
That's great. Also, it's not a suspicious thing to have an interest in World War II. World War II is insanely interesting. Like, politically wise, much more happens in World War I, but World War II was way sexier.
Way more exciting.
Super exciting. And like, just even the advancements in technology is insane.
Although I guess he's from Sweden, so he's probably not as averse to the cold as I am. But don't you think in New Year's in fucking Krakow would be fucking cold?
I wonder if it'd be on the same level, actually, because I do know Poland obviously gets super freezing, but so does Sweden. But he won't care. He'd be like, we have the jackets for it. Let us go.
You know? I would be dying. Be freezing my nuts off.
You'd be fine. I went to like Krakow in like November, and I just went there in like a sheepskin coat, and I was totally fine.
But January 1st, I would die. I'd probably rather go there in the summer.
Why would you take her to such a depressing place for New Year's? You guys will neither be in a celebratory mood nor in the mood for some epic lovemaking after going there. To which are...
Well, I guess it depends on the predilections of Mrs. Swede.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some girls are turned on. I'm talking about Kay Rambo. About the about concentration camps.
I'm not turned on by the camps. I just think the Nazi uniform was very sexy. And I think if you disagree, then you know nothing about fashion.
Do you think Swede dressed up in a Nazi uniform, but just that has the crotch out?
You know what, though? Not enough is ever said about how fucking tough as nails Scandinavia was in World War II. So he doesn't... I would just dress as like a Scandinavian in World War II and be like, I am the hardest thing in the war right now, baby. The hardest thing that in the be, war
they,
right
they
now,
see that being
baby.
Hot.
Bonded, you either do not know me or severely underestimate what I can accomplish with that which I have been endowed with. Thinking of the uniform and jackboots I'd already packed.
See, he already has it. Kate, the whole uniform.
To. Krakow is a fantastic place filled with history and great food. And Auschwitz, or Oświęcim, as it's called in Polish, did not disappoint.
Good lad.
Awe, insight, and understanding flooding you at the same time is overwhelming.
Wait a second. Is he listening to Tom Petty in the background?
I wondered what song it is. I hope it's not Tom Petty, Swede.
It certainly sounds like Tom Petty
Swede,
to me.
Why?
Thank you, Swede, for playing a little bit of Tom Petty.
No, fuck off with this. This is worse.
I feel very American right now.
Tom Petty is worse than a concentration
fist
camp.
Fist bump. Fist bump to you, Swede.
I'm fucking glad Tom Petty is dead.
That's what Tom Petty fans do. They fist bump. We're fist bumping right now.
Really powerful feeling. I mean, pictures simply don't do it justice. I know we've seen instruments of torture like the rack and the Iron Maiden and kind of shiver at them. Imagine something like 12 football fields worth of space dedicating to breaking people's souls, reducing them
crazy.
To first cattle and then ash. Guided tours are the staple at Auschwitz. And
what if they played Tom Petty at Auschwitz?
It's like, what, the Americans? They should do reenactments at Auschwitz. This is how they can elevate
I'm talking
Auschwitz
psychological
to the
warfare. No, like, would that work for you? Would that be torture?
Would. I'd be like, turn it off. But they should do reenactments at Auschwitz, you know, just to like really class the joint up, to class up the place. And they should, when the Americans start rolling in on the tanks, they'd be blasting Tom Petty, CCR, Fortunate Son, and what else is a really super American song? Like the most Kid
Boston,
Rock.
More Than a Feeling.
More Than a Feeling. That'd be great. Kid Rock, I think.
I'm sure at this reenactment, people would be lining up to
be
part
the Jews.
Of the Jews. Like,
yeah.
Please pick me.
Next up, get in the oven. Now you. Yeah, it'd be fun.
Can I go on the train?
I want to play the despondent Nazi guard who is only doing it because, you know, the economy kind of sucks right now and they have, you know, hurt geld back home and they have my
You would not. You'd be Ilsa
kinder.
The she-devil with your bullwhip.
I'm just,
and
you know,
black
I'm,
boots.
The economy sucks. I could not get a job anywhere else. I want to play him.
You're not the remorseful Nazi.
No,
you would be
despondent.
Ilsa she-wolf.
At what point did I
what
say remorseful? I said despondent.
No, obviously you're feeling guilt. That's why you're trying to justify why you work
I could,
there.
You know, I am.
Which,
I'm sure
there were a couple that did that, but I think the role you would play would be Ilsa She-Wolf.
I mean, there was a lot of Nazi guards who were like, you know, back home I was baker, but this is the best job I can get. And instead of baking bread, I now bake juice.
I think there are lots of Nazi guards who had a huge boner while they're throwing Jewish children into the fucking gas chamber.
Yeah, you know why? Because they were all on meth.
Yeah.
We were no exception. Noticing that nobody asked any questions, out of respect, perhaps, the autistic side of my brain saw its chance to peek out. This in front of one Polish female guide and a mixed group of 20 strangers. Questions and assertions that retrospectively might sound a bit suspicious, like, why don't you mention that the chimney of this supposed gas chamber is actually a Soviet addition and there never was one here previously? And of course, almost demanding the sources for the exact number of deaths post at 1.2 million.
Wow, he almost sounds like a denier.
That would be so funny if we did that. When I went to Auschwitz for the second time, we had the headphones. And like, you know, you could listen to the little thing that looks like an MP3 player. And you had headphones.
Oh, wait, they do guided tours now?
Maybe it is a guided tour thing. And then obviously when we went with school, that was a guided tour. And we were just with our school crowd.
Did you ask a question? Were you like denying the Holocaust?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the amount of fatalities?
These chimneys are fake. No.
I don't know about that. There's no way the gas could have fallen at this angle into the chamber, causing that much death.
No way, man. 6 million, man. There wasn't even that many in Europe at the time, man.
That seems inflated, if you ask me.
I didn't consider the optics of a guy with a shaven head and rune tattoos on his head, skulls on his hands, asking these questions.
Wait, he's got a head. He's got head tattoos.
He has a hair, so I've not seen his head tattoos, but that would have been even better.
Yeah, I
mean, he should have drawn a swastika on just for the fun of it.
He looks like one of the Aryan Knights sitting here denying the Holocaust openly at Auschwitz. Take some balls.
Those shoes are fake.
Mrs. Sweet did, however. Jack boots on. We sure did celebrate New Year's in Krakow.
So he got his end away. Good lad.
Yeah, I wonder if Mrs. Sweet is also a Tom Petty fan.
I hope not.
I don't know.
Is the ex-Mrs. Sweet, though, so maybe they broke up
because
she wasn't a Tom Petty fan.
Wait, he got a divorce recently?
No, he just means, like, girlfriend.
Oh, okay, before they got married.
Yeah, you'd be like, here's my missus for, like, even in long term. Or, like, I always like ball and chain, like, implying that having a woman in your life is, like, crippling, like, being in a jail.
I can relate to that.
When I used to work in a shop, I used to work in a shop, day. One of my favorite things is I used to have this old guy customer, and I'd be like, you know, boxing up his beer or his wine. I'd be like, would you like a bag? And he's like, no, I left her at home. Laugh every single time.
It's almost like a Rodney Dangerfield
whenever
joke.
He didn't say it, I'd like look at him and be like, is she at home? Like, please say it again. Like an autistic kid, like, say it again, sir.
Well, thank you, Swede. And yeah, we'll play your soundscape that you made about Auschwitz on the Patreon because it's long.
And it's really good.
Well, and I think people need to be in like the right mindset. Like, you got to be in a dark room. You got to smoke a little reefer.
Yeah.
And just put your headphones on. Don't listen to it through your car stereo. Headphones.
Phones on, I agree. Yeah. It deserves attention.
Yeah, you should. Next thing we have here that I want to cover is an interesting email we received to sickandwrongpodcast@gmail.com. This came from Kenneth. He wrote, actually, he goes by Kenny. Kenny from Aberdeen.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, he said, Glasgow Greg's true identity has been revealed.
Yeah, we've met him and he is called Greg and he's from Glasgow.
He says, guys, I've just been to see Jerry Sadowitz. You know who this person is?
Jerry Sadowitz. I'm not sure.
I've never heard of him. He goes, I'm sure you know of him. If not, check him out, as it would be the spawn of what would be the spawn of Dee and Kate.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, he's either banned from most platforms or actively removes his material online. He just doesn't want to get any kind of recognition.
Is he a comedian or something? Because Kenny, I already like you because you're from Skabardeen. But if he's a modern comedian, he has like less than 10% chance.
I don't know anything about this guy, but I was going to listen to it to see if he actually sounds like Glasgow Greg. He goes, I'm sure Glasgow Greg is Jerry Sadowitz.
Ooh, okay.
Listen here and see the similarities. So let's check this out.
Right, oh.
He sent me a SoundCloud link. So let's see.
Honestly, there's so much happening in the news, it's very hard to keep track of things. Like, there's been serious allegations in the news of child abuse. And
this guy's almost a bit more coherent.
He's less Ouija.
Well, maybe, yeah, maybe he's not Glaswegian, or maybe he's not as intoxicated as Glasgow Greg is when he calls the show.
In Cleveland. Serious allegations of child abuse in Cleveland. Now, to my mind, there's only one way of finding out whether it's true or not, and that is to call in Jimmy Savile. I mean, what, you can't afford to fuck about? Bring in an expert. Am I right?
I mean,
a friend of mine
reckons
that Jimmy Savile's a paedophile. Rubbish, he's a child bender.
He
bends. That's why he does all the
way.
Fucking charity work. It's to gain public sympathy for when his fucking case comes up. I've always known that.
Do you think the Jimmy Savile material just goes over well at every comedy club?
We all get a good laugh out of Jimmy Savile.
I wonder if Harrison did that whole stand-up routine and he went to Edinburgh, or I think it was Glasgow, Edinburgh, did some stand-up. What if he did the whole 5-minute, his type 5 on Jimmy Savile?
It might be funny. Why not? It's Jimmy Savile.
You think that would go over well? Would it go over well better in Scotland than it would in the UK?
I think it would go over well, depending on where, like, in Britain, it would be fine. Like, the only people who ever really get butthurt about, like, what jokes you make is Americans. They're like, don't say
Americans.
The word cunt. Don't make jokes
Americans
about
9/11. So
yeah, it's a lot.
They don't like joking about pedos.
Like, yeah, whereas I think in Britain, you can pretty much be guaranteed to, like, make a very dark joke, and there'll be one person in the back just laughing their head off.
Do you think this guy sounds like Glasgow Greg?
I can't work out. Like, I only left you 6 months ago, Britain. But I can't work out whereabouts, because in a way, he kind of sounds like a lowlander. He doesn't sound like he's from, he sounds like he could be from front borders. And I don't mean the Scottish borders, I mean like the borders of like England and Scotland. He kind of sounds like that a bit.
Aye, you might be able to fool you, not fucking me, I'll tell you that. Doesn't fucking fool this big-nosed Jewish bastard over here, I'll tell you that. I've always thought you could take the action of a wank and...
I'm offended now.
American, see?
I'm going to go to the NFDC to tell my boys over at Cantor's about this.
Turn it into a voice, you'd get Jimmy Savile, wouldn't you? No, lovely, 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 ooh, ooh, lovely, young Billy,
That's a pretty good Savile impression, though. That wasn't bad. That wasn't a bad impression of Jimmy
Maybe
Savile.
I would have to see what that guy looks like and how he goes. But yeah, I kind of already don't like him.
He
kind of
looks like Rick Mahal in this
photo. Oh,
does he? In this
Rick Mahal is delightful.
I can't really tell.
Oh, he wears a flat cap. Good for him.
Thank you, Kenny. I'm not convinced that that's Glasgow Greg, other than they do sound a bit alike. And they both make jokes about Jimmy Savile.
And Jews.
So yeah, I do see the connection there. Anyway, he goes, cheers, Kenny from Aberdeen. P.S. I have a wedding to attend reluctantly in Penrith later in the year. Any advice on the area other than not to bother would be appreciated.
Kenny, how did you know what I was going to say, man? Firstly, I would like to say the Tiki Bar. I can't remember the name of it, Kenny, in Aberdeen. I hope it's still going. It's fucking awesome. So you get points for that.
There's a Tiki Bar, like an old school one?
No, it's not old school. It's modern, but like they make super strong drinks. I think it's called Krakoa, like X-Men Krakoa. It's great. I can't remember where we played in Aberdeen, but also we had the best fish and chips in my fucking life. Kenny, you'll know exactly where I mean. This is back when I was eating meat, though, because it's all done in beef dripping. Kenny, I remember those fish and chips. No, I'm praising Aberdeen here. I don't mind.
Wait. What about Penrith? Where should you go in Penrith?
Like good pubs in Penrith.
That one that we went to with the old people?
All of them.
No, we went to one in particular. There was like an old person pub.
Oh, the Druids is
the
tiny.
The Druids,
you
that one.
Try and go in the Druids as long as there's like two of you, because it is literally someone's front living room. It's very like Werewolf in London, small.
American Werewolf in London, yeah. That's what I was.
Gloucester's good. Gloucester's big if there's a lot of you. I used to work in the Gloucester a long, long time ago. That's the Richard III pub. Remember when we could have been anyone.
Oh, and we got the tour.
Yeah,
right?
The guy took us upstairs. I was like, I used to work here. This was my first job when I was 18.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And he took us upstairs and showed us the old king's bedroom.
The
but
old
when I was
job
there,
chamber.
When I was there, there was a bed in it, so it was more impressive. Although it was a bit more rapey because it was an empty room. And
isn't
was just
that
a bed.
Where the ghost was?
Yeah, and they say there's tunnels all under Penrith. You should definitely if you're going in the summer, mate, get some tins from Morrison's and just go to Castle Park, which is a 2-minute walk. Walk around that and drink your tins and then go to the McDonald's, because the McDonald's in Penrith is dead good, because there's fuck all else. So they really pride themselves on their McDonald's there. Where in Penrith are you going?
Because you're making it sound so appealing.
Why do you think I left? But I do want to know where in Penrith this wedding is, because there's maybe two places I could think it could be. Unless it's outside. If you're outside of Penrith, you're in the Lake District, get the tins in. It'll be super fucking expensive.
It's quite a journey, isn't it, from Aberdeen?
Aye. Like, if you're driving, it's like 5 hours.
Yeah, it's a long way. Anyway, thank you, Kenny, for writing in.
Kenny the legend.
Good luck in Penrith. People, you can call the Sick Around Hotline, 323-522-4032, or just email the show, sickaroundpodcast@gmail.com. My voice is shot, so we got to wrap this up. But I do want to talk about something kind of funny I came across. So you know how I always go about with the Tee Public store, like, oh, there's a sale going on. Like, you know, our representative emailed me and said there's a sale.
There is actually a sale going on right now.
No, there isn't actually.
No, there is, because I was looking at t-shirts last night.
I think the sale ended.
No, I was looking at t-shirts last night.
Oh, it is. There is one going on. I don't fucking know. There's always a sale there.
There is.
But we have a new representative named Violet. I don't know what happened to the old one, but I just stopped emailing the old one, and I thought this new one I thought was like junk email. So I've just been, I haven't been reading
poor
her emails.
Poor Violet.
Yeah, poor Violet.
Love that name.
But apparently we're in some kind of like, I don't know, like prime partner thing with them, that they put us in as prime partner, which means we get free design support. So like they have a team of designers that design whatever we want to design for t-shirts. So being a prime partner means we have to do 6 new designs. So I asked her, I was like, oh, that sounds very interesting. Will your design team create any shirt for us? And she goes, yes, as part of our free design service for prime partners, our team can definitely help out getting some new designs created and uploaded for you. If you have any concepts or things you want to try, we can start there. Just let us know. Suggest some ideas, or maybe draw up a design and send it in, and we'll help you with it.
Atheist preacher, you have been called to arms right now.
Pick up your pen. I think this might be hilarious. If you guys have any kind of concept for a new Sick and Wrong Tee that we'll put at the Tee Public store, let us know or send it in. Just you can, you know, draw crude drawings, or you could just describe it.
Oh yeah, or both.
What I want to do is I want to read her responses when we send the design concepts to her.
And you know what we'll do as well? So did she say 6?
She said if we're going to be a prime partner, we have to do 6 a year.
Oh, 6 a year. So we can just like submit a few now.
We can submit as many as we want and then find out if they're willing to make them.
Okay, so this is kind of like a competition now. So whoever design gets picked by Violet and the team at Tee Public, we will send you that shirt.
Yeah, we will get you the design. All right, that sounds good. Yeah, we'll do that.
It's a competition.
And plus, I ordered a bunch of stickers. I just made some new stickers. I'll give you some stickers.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some pictures. We can sign some pictures.
I just think it's hilarious that this woman has no idea
what's about to happen to her.
What type of concepts our audience will come up with.
Should give everyone, 4 weeks from now? What's that?
Yeah, just do, yeah. I would say the next few weeks, I'm supposed to send her a couple designs. I have a couple in mind that I want to try. But if you do have any concepts, if you do have any concepts, send them in, because I think it'll be hilarious to see her response.
She'll be like, what's a blubkin?
Quit stealing my ideas.
No.
But anyway, if you want to go check out the Tee Public stores, go to sickaroundpodcast.com/shop. Click on the picture of the Pope. Get yourself some merch. Finally here, Sick Wrong Song of the Week. So when Jimmy was talking about the band that was his favorite punk band, I guess that kind of got him into the whole Lads and everything, he was talking about Bad Religion, a great LA punk band.
Who were in the Lads as well.
And who were members of the Lads. And he was saying he sang backup on this particular track, The Voice of God is Government, from Bad Religion's album, How Could Hell Be Any Worse, came out in 1982. So we're going to end the show here with The Voice of God is Government,
Jimmy.
With Jimmy Genocide doing backup. Thank you, Jimmy, for being on the show. Definitely have to have him back on.
Oh, he was so awesome.
He was cool. It was cool chatting with him. People will be back next week with episode 939. Till then, take it sleazy.
Neighbors, no one loves you like he loves you. And no one...
cares like he cares. Neighbors, let us join today in the holy love of God and money. Because neighbors, no one loves you like he loves you. Now what better way to show your love than to dig deep into your pockets? Dig real deep and give until it hurts. Alleviate your guilt. Free yourself once again, because he gave to you, brothers and sisters. Please give a $10, $25, or $50 tax-deductible donation, and I assure you your modest pledge will be used to censor TV and radio, ban questionable books, and contribute to many other godly services. No longer will young Christian Americans hedonistically indulge in masochistic submission to terrific music, or with your monetary support, there is no end to what we can achieve in this country. The voice of God is government. The voice of God is government. The voice of God is government. Hey God, please try. Can't you see what we believe in? Our thoughts and our reasons, suit of life and liberty. Happy as we can, I say, it's because the truth of the mighty voice of our desire lives like I am in a chase of our sexes, and with one small flaw. The voice of God is government. The voice of God is government. The voice of God is government. If we shun God and Jesus Christ, religious love is sacrifice. Love for God is shown to cash. Don't accept, sell our trash. And repent that we would save our money. That's what God needs. Build a $1 million church. Money spent on God's search. Voice of God is government. Voice of God is government. Voice of God is government. Late night TV, dog and meals, certain voices set up deals. Love for money and God's name, this is not what TV gave. Money spent on God's church. Money spent on God's church. Voice of God is government. 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 Voice of God is government.
Okay. What if someone rings in about how concerned they are about Kate Middleton?
We can play it and laugh about it.
I'm not. I'm concerned.
How are you concerned?
I'm genuinely concerned about the welfare of the royals, okay?
What, about the welfare of her uterus?
I don't know what's going on.
There's a question for you. Who do you think had the sexier uterus? Diana? Kate. I feel like Kate's pussy would be a little neater than Diana's. There's just something, I don't know, like sloppy about Princess Diana's vagina in my mind.
I know this might sound controversial, but Queen Elizabeth.
When she was hot or when she was old?
No, like 2 years ago.
What about the Queen Mum, mate? She was pickled in gin, so she's probably had a right good bashing at her vagina.
I try
vagina.
Not to think of her uterus.
I'm talking
the Queen,
about...
Because how often do you think Philip fucked the Queen?
Probably when he was hammered enough.
Yeah, but I mean, in recent years, she probably ain't gotten laid in like, what, 2 decades?
Maybe.
3 decades? She was old.
You're also forgetting the Queen was a busy woman. She was always jetting about. I bet they probably spent maybe 10 days together and it would be very, very, Philip, I'm exhausted. And then he would make like a racist remark and she would giggle and fall asleep.
Well, I don't know. You
can it's much call, like our relationship.
You can call in and tell us whose vagina you'd rather see. Was it Diana, Kate's?
Not mine, the other Kate's.
Okay, Diana, Kate's, the Queen. I'm going to go with Meghan.
But Meghan's got that designer pussy of America, although she is Canadian, isn't she? She's got a designer. She might have had some nips and tucks. So she doesn't count. But if we're going to go with like usurping Americans in the royal family, it's got to be Wallace. She had style, she had taste, and she wore fur. So I'm going.
Is that Fergie?
Wallace Simpson, mate.
I don't know that one. That's
oh, she's very
cut.
Dignified and sexy.
Cut.
Her pussy was so diamond level that the king gave up his throne.
Which king?
King Edward.
When was this? Like in 1852?
Like the 1940s, I want to say. Maybe what? Before.
Well, Queen Elizabeth was reigning then.
It was before Queen Elizabeth.
So that would have been like like the early 1900s.
No, it was like, I can't remember if it was during the war or after the World War II. Whatever, mate. Her pussy was so good that Eddie was like, I've got to get more of this. And he was like, I step down as king.
I think you're making up these royals.
I'm not. She's gorgeous. You're making them up.
Where was Prince Philip?
Prince
Why
Philip
wasn't he
was,
tapping that ass?
Prince Philip was but a lad, and he was getting bummed in Greece at the time.
I doubt it. Anyway, people, give us a call, 323-522-4032. We do want to hear from you.